We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again.
Memories have been made.
Halliburton. A deep three for the lead! And baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away! Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game!
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake, shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
Flips it down!
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go! Go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. And ladies and gentlemen, the man who is in the building for game one. He is back. He is alive. He is kicking. He made it out of Madison Square Garden alive. He did it. He survived. We don't know how much tickets cost because he won't tell me, but he said there's a lot of beans. I told him to spill the beans. He said there's a lot of beans. I'm not spilling them. But this man, he's paying for Taylor Swift ticket concerts. You know, he's buying game one playoff tickets to Madison Square Garden. I mean, this man, money bag Fauci over here. Mike, what's up, brother?
I wish. But, man, I just wanted to roll the dice for one epic memory. I'm still in that search of that next Pacers victory. I'm sorry, everybody. Just so you know, I tried to play it right. I spoke with Alex. I said, I'm going to do things differently this time. I'm not telling anybody. I'm not going to put that out in the atmosphere. But I'd be lying to you if I said with about 2 or 3 minutes left in the game that I wasn't fantasizing about what this video would be that I was going to upload with about nearly 20,000 Knick fans just all upset and me just cheering saying the curse is over. But I just didn't have that opportunity. And look, it was great atmosphere. Really was. But I got to admit, I'm still licking my wounds. And I'm hurt from that loss.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about it last night with Derek, and I don't want to rehash what I talked about, but I am kind of curious from your perspective, being in the building, the calls that were made. I mean, maybe just going back, listening to some of the takes you've heard today, like what were your thoughts on the game?
It was tough. Well, one, I want to say it was a hard atmosphere, I think, for Pacer fans to travel. One, we touched on, it was very expensive. It definitely was. Two, it's a Monday night, and there is a big distance between the fan bases, but I got to admit, I was let down. Physically, this is the truth. I counted 12 Pacer fans that I ran into from before the game, during the game, and after the game. That's all I can count, and that's 12. I mean, it sounds crazy to say there might have been 20, but there was not. There's no way that there was 100 Pacer fans in this arena of about 20,000, you know, fans. So it was a tough showing. I do think that maybe some of the weekend games could be a little bit easier for some, you know, road fans to attend. But yeah, I was definitely severely outnumbered. That was really tough. But I think in terms of the officiating, it was a poorly officiated game. And I think that that goes for both sides. I mean, let's just put this in perspective. There was three successful challenges. If the Neesmith one was able to be challenged, that would have been a fourth. That just shows there was not good officiating. Obviously, when the Pacers are on the other end of those, you know, Knicks fans were thrilled. They didn't care. You know, what do you mean? Of course it's a kickball. You know, turn her off, definitely a foul. You have to call that. Of course they're saying all that. But it was definitely a tough pill to swallow being in that environment, knowing how good of a game, I don't even want to say how great of a game the Pacers played, but they played a good enough game to be able to win. And unfortunately, you should never have to battle the refs, but I hate being that guy pointing back at the officiating.
From the on-court perspective, in terms of non-officiating stuff, just like the style of play, the pace that the game was played at, did you feel like you were a little bit shocked the Knicks were able to kind of maintain the same pace as Indiana?
I was, because I thought the Knicks were going to bring us down to their pace, a much slower pace. I think many people might have thought this game could have been 105 to 100, something along those lines. Like, you know, this was kind of Pacer basketball, except it's unfortunate the Knicks actually outscored the Pacers on fast break points, 20 to 18. That's something that I don't think really many people were expecting. But I do think there is enough to say, hey, if the Knicks are going to be playing at the Pacers' pace, it very well may favor Indiana.
Well, let's talk about this, because obviously Halliburton's a big talking point. I don't want to go into that too much. I know you probably feel the same way that me and Derek felt. He's got to be much, much better. But I do want to get your thoughts on this, because it's one of those things where I felt like after this game, you could look at it as a half glass full, half glass empty type thing. But do you feel like it's more of a half glass full? Like, the Pacers almost won this game with Halliburton only having 6 points and everything like that on the road. Your role players really stepped up, or do you feel like, oh man, we let this one go. New York's got our number now.
We let this one go. We did. If we could have won this game and Halliburton had 10 points, I think you're like, oh my God, you know what? He's going to play better than this. We're going to be more than fine. Like, the bench was phenomenal in this game, but I just felt that, you know, it's hard to feel glass half full because, you know, you let one slip. Winning game one on the road is one of the hardest things to do, I think, in sports. Obviously, game seven is so hard, but this is one that I think the Pacers had. They led for the majority of this game. They played a really good time, but they crumbled in the fourth quarter. And I think that that's really tough. And just going back to Halliburton before we, you know, get into everything like that later, because I know we got an awesome guest coming on in the name of Chris Denari, a legend. They made Knicks fans were making jokes on Halliburton's behalf all after the game. What a joke. This guy, Team USA, oh my God, 6 points. I mean, they were laughing him out of the building, and that was tough. And look, obviously I'm going to defend my guy, but it was hard to defend 6 points and six shots in a playoff game when the guy on the other end had 43. So I kind of just had to almost kind of tuck my head. You know, I didn't have a jacket to zip up. I was rocking the Reggie Miller jersey. And really kind of letting them hear it. But I knew, hey, let me just get out of here alive and in one piece and hope that game two is something different.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think the Pacers have been a resilient team all season long. Yeah. They've been able to bounce back. I was just a little bit surprised. Like, after this game, Knicks fans were basically saying, like, oh, Knicks in four now.
Panting as we were walking out of the arena.
Oh, seriously?
Oh, Knicks in four. That's all I heard. They weren't even saying five. Four.
Yeah,
it's like they are looking past the Pacers and on to Boston, and that, I hope, bites them in the butt.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say the Pacers are going to win the series. I don't even know what your prediction was coming into the series. I don't think you gave one.
I hope, to be honest, I hope they could go at least six. I would love to say, hey, seven, but I don't think that many people were thinking Pacers are favored or anything of that sort. We know we have our hands full, but after that game, if the Pacers won game one, I'd be saying something totally different.
I mean, I said Knicks in seven on the preview that I did, and the reason I said that is just because I felt like this is going to be a lot closer of a series and people gave it credit for it.
Yep.
And to me, like, I know you felt a little bit half glass empty. I felt actually kind of half glass full, and I'll tell you why. It's because I didn't think Siakam played a great game. Halliburton clearly didn't play a great game.
No.
I don't think Nembhard was at his best.
Nope.
Neesmith has kind of been who Neesmith has been. Turner's kind of been who Turner has been. You got great bench production, but I don't see that really changing much. I think that their bench is going to be able to do that. not maybe at that level, but they're going to be able to have impact in this series. And I don't really think that Josh Hart and DiVincenzo are going to be 25 points per game scores and 24 points per game scores.
Josh Hart can't do that again. He played as good as he could possibly play.
I mean, he almost had a triple-double.
I know. Across the board, this is a guy who averaged about 9 points per game in the regular season.
Like, he averaged 16, almost 17 points against the 76ers. He's shooting the ball really well. I'm not going to discredit him, but I don't think that they're going to be able to support the Knicks and be, you know, bringing 50 points a game together, those two players as the second and third options. You know, OG might have a better game. Hartenstein might have a better game. But, like, I don't really expect them to, like, have much of more of an impact than they already did. And I just felt like there were so many little plays in this game that just went the Knicks' way, whether it was, you know, the Hartenstein three-pointer, half-court heave.
I believe that ended up
you know,
that big
going into the half up nine versus six is a big difference, especially when you lose by four, you know? So, I also thought, while I love the Obi Toppin between the leg dunk, he celebrated too long, and the Knicks were able to hit a three on the very next play.
True.
And to me, that was just like Carlisle's talked about. You can't celebrate too much. Number one, I don't actually like that he did the dunk.
Remember when he missed it in the beginning of the year? That was rough.
Yeah, and then I don't like, I mean,
that would have been really bad.
Yeah, and I respect Turner for trying to dunk on Hartenstein, but like, if it's not all the way there, like, just don't force it, in my opinion. So, you know, beggars can't be choosers. You know, if he has a poster dunk, I'm probably going crazy. So, you know, like I said, you can't freak out about it. But Aaron Nesmith had a poster dunk.
It was ferocious.
On Mitchell Robinson. So I just feel like the Pacers can play a lot better. I really do. And I felt like they were able to hang in there. And that's what made me feel good about that game, Fauci. It's just, I understand, like, the referees really kind of took some of the momentum away from Indiana in this game. But, like, the fact that they were able to be that close in game one, and Brunson still had 43 points, and Halliburton had six, got outscored by 37, that gives me hope that the Pacers can make this more of a series than maybe people are thinking.
I just don't think that there's any scenario where Halliburton can show up less in any other game.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, so, and honestly, out of the two shots that he made, one of them came 2 minutes into the game. So it's just like, it's all up from here. Even if I think that, I don't know, whatever it was, maybe it's the back, maybe he just felt that he was being guarded. You saw Brunson force shots. He was hitting tough shots with defenders in his face, and I think that Halliburton has to at least let it fly. Hopefully he can learn from the difference between game one and game two in that Milwaukee series where I felt that he was a little bit more aggressive, but it's time to, you know, kind of put up or shut up. This is the second round of the playoffs. This is really where the big boys play. He's got to be able to bring his A game, because as good as Turner was, I just don't feel confident that the Pacers are going to be able to win games if Turner's your leading scorer. Also in a game where he had two rebounds. You know, held the Knicks centers really off the glass for a good chunk of the game. And now that bench that only brought 3 points for the Knicks, it's getting a little bit thinner. Mitchell Robinson has been ruled out for game two. So there'll be a little bit more pressure to Chua, who has played well at times against the Pacers. But that bench for New York, it's just getting thinner and thinner. I think the Pacers have an opportunity in game two to really be able to, you know, crank it up, turn on the Jets, turn up that pace, and hope for the best.
All right, Fauci. Well, Chris Sinari is in the waiting room right now, so we're going to go ahead and take a quick break and let you guys know about Unified Healing and the other sponsors of this podcast. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or simpler, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Indiana or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/pace, P-A-C-E. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including HVAC system. Now, let's get back to the show.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, everybody, we are back. And joining us now is Chris Denary, the voice of the Pacers television broadcast. And Chris, I have to ask you, was it a Madison Square Garden screw job by the officials, or was it the Focci curse why the Pacers lost game one against the New York Knicks?
Well, you know, we've been discussing this off air. When I truly heard the numbers from Focci, what his record is going live to a Pacers game, I have to say it's the Focci curse. And I hope Focci, right now, that if anybody offers you a free ticket for game two, that you turn it down.
I can't argue with you, because look, if it's game seven and everything's on the line, I don't think I would ever be able to hop back on this podcast or show my face amongst Pacer Nation again. So I'm going to tell everybody right now, I have seen my last Pacer game live this year. That you can count on.
I mean, we'll let you come back. You know, maybe it's Pacers Nets or Pacers Knicks next October or November. Okay.
I'm down to go to that game.
But let's absolutely stay away from anything here in May at Madison Square Garden.
16-game losing streak for Focci, dating back to 2019. You know, Focci, the only thing worse than that maybe is the egregious officiating we saw in the game last night. Don't want to be too much of a crybaby here. I've complained a lot about the officials on the last podcast, last segment. So, Chris, I'm just going to ask you, you know, your perspective on the calls that were made, the last two-minute report that we got today on Tuesday afternoon. What were your thoughts on everything that went down?
Well, the last two-minute report didn't surprise me. I figured that they would stay with the call that the Miles Turner screen was quote-unquote illegal, and that's what they did. But the two biggest calls that they said they didn't get right were the DiVincenzo screen and then the kick ball. Now, last night after the game, they said that they got that call wrong. The two-minute report earlier today said, we missed the DiVincenzo illegal screen. That should have been Pacers ball. That was a five-point turnaround, because the Pacers maybe score in transition on a three-on-one, four-on-two break and go up two. Instead, New York gets to re-inbound the basketball, and they look to double Brunson, and DiVincenzo hits one of his five threes.
So all of a sudden you're down three. So to me, that's where the Pacers lost the game right there. We can go to the 1-point game late with Miles Turner, but they would have never been in that situation if they would have gotten the call right inside the final minute.
Look, if you're Indiana, are you extremely frustrated with this, you know, officiating and maybe letting a very winnable game slip by? Or do you feel that you didn't play your best game by any means, yet for most of the game you led and you still have an opportunity to steal home court in game two, just like you did against Milwaukee?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, just following it from afar, and again, I'm not with the team, and it's a little bit hard when you do 90 of the 93 games on television, and then you're watching game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals on your couch. It's a little difficult, but I think the Pacers have handled it well. They've said, look, we wish the officials would have gotten these calls right, but there are things that we could do that are better. But at the same point, I thought the Pacers played pretty well. They shot 52% from the field. They made 10 threes, 39%. Decent job at the free throw line. Turnovers only 8. Got to do a better job on the glass. They won the boards in the first half. Badly beaten in the second half. Second chance points. Knicks had 16. The thing that I was impressed with New York guys is New York had 20 fast break points. Yeah. They won playing Indiana's game. So, but I look at it, yeah, Tyrese Halliburton didn't have a very good game. He had 6 points, 8 assists, only took 6 shots. I think he'll be much improved in game two. That's what we saw in the Milwaukee series. He had a tough game one, bounced back in games two and on. Your bench was terrific. I mean, the Pacers played well enough to win. And you can't say that about game one in Milwaukee, right? They did not play well enough to win and had no chance. But the other night at Madison Square Garden, the Pacers had a chance to win game one. I think they win game two.
Let's talk about what Jalen Brunson was able to do in this game. It kind of felt like he was having a pretty solid game and then really turned things on in the fourth quarter, dropping 21 points for the Knicks. What can Indiana do differently in game two defensively to try to slow him down?
Well, I mean, the problem is just think about the pass that he made to DiVincenzo. Nesmith looked like he was going to go help double on Brunson, and he did. He maybe overcommitted, and then DiVincenzo got it and hit one of his 5 threes. So, I mean, that's the risk you take. If you try to double Brunson, he's a good enough passer that he's going to find, you know, willing shooters. And right now he's getting great help from DiVincenzo and Hart. I just think you got to be more solid. You've got to make him take more shots from the standpoint, guys. You can't foul him. He was 14 of 14 at the free throw line. You've got to keep him off the line. If you look at the Philadelphia series, if you look at Brunson at the end of the regular season, he was throwing up some huge numbers. I don't think that's going to change. But you've got to make other guys beat you or, you know, not have Brunson get to the free throw line. Because the other thing, guys, is that slows the game down. And when those guys, Brunson played 43 minutes, DiVincenzo 43 minutes, Hart 48, and Anunoby 42. When you go to the free throw line, you have a chance to catch your breath. You have a chance to rest. So you can't foul the Knicks and you can't foul Jalen Brunson. He's going to get 30 plus because that's just what he does. But you've got to find a way to make him work for that 30 plus.
Yeah, you know, coming into this series, I thought you can hold Jalen to roughly about 30. That's a major win. Now it might be about 35 points or so. But on the flip side of things, Tyrese Halliburton. This was Halliburton had a similar performance to, you know, game one against Milwaukee, where not that many shots, just 2 of 6 from the field. One of those made shots actually came within the first 2 minutes of the game. Never really looked like a threat. I don't know if it's the back injury. I don't know if it's a hamstring injury. Or maybe it was just, hey, he was, you know, guarded very well by New York. But what can the Pacers do to perhaps get Tyrese into a groove or maybe just a little bit more confidence overall?
Yeah. I mean, I think he did a lot of good things early on. Even though he wasn't scoring, he was finding guys for dunks and open three-point shots. And what is strange, guys, is over his career, especially with the Pacers, you've seen him have some quiet first halves, and then he comes out and really jump starts the team with the third quarter. And I sort of thought that's what was going to happen in game one, that he was sort of picking and choosing his moments. He likes to get everybody involved, and then he looks for the opportunity to take over. And that just never happened in the third quarter. You know, all day long, I followed media, and he said, look, I have to be better. I think he Brian Windhorst texted me from ESPN and said, I think he said it 13 times. I've got to be better. And I expect he will be. So I just think he has to be more aggressive. I think, you know, part of me, it felt like he didn't want to take bad shots. But I'll take Tyrese taking a bad shot here or there, because I think that gives him the freedom to do things that he needs to do.
I am kind of curious, going back to Brunson, not just on the offensive side of things and how do you stop him with your defense, but how can you make him work more on the other side of the court, him work more on defense? Because I think one thing we've kind of seen teams do or figure out a little bit, the Bucks finally figured out, I think, game five, second half, and then some in game six, and New York did it as well in game one, kind of hiding players on Aaron Nesmith, because he's more of a catch-and-shoot guy, not a guy that's going to really be involved in much of a pick-and-roll, pick-and-pop type thing. Is there a way Indiana can try to get Brunson more heavily involved and working on the defensive side of things and potentially get him in foul trouble there?
Yeah, I think, I like what Aaron did. You know, that dunk he had in the second half was fantastic. I'd like to see him do more off the dribble than just be a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. Now, that's a great strength of his. I mean, for much of the year, prior to his slump at the end of the year, you know, he was top two, top five in three-point shooting. But I do think if you can get the ball to the rim against somebody like Brunson, you're going to make him work harder. If he's able to just chase people out on the perimeter and never get inside defensively, then that makes it a little bit easier on him. So I think you've got to move him, and I think you've got to be physical with him. And by being physical on the offensive end, that's getting him into the lane and taking him to the basket.
You know, one thing that I saw, you touched about how the Pacers shot the ball pretty well from three, about 38, 39%, but it was 10 of 26 from three. And I looked back, 26 threes, that's not really that much for Indiana. Yeah. They had 10 attempts in the first quarter, just 16 for the remaining three quarters. And then when I look back at the Bucks series, they averaged, Indiana averaged 43-point attempts against Milwaukee, just 4 three-point attempts in the fourth quarter of this game against New York. Do you think the 26 threes is something that's going to remain in the next coming games, or are we going to see that number tick back up to what we're used to for the Pacers?
Yeah, I think that number's got to be higher. I think it can be too high sometimes. I mean, sometimes you question some of the threes that guys take, but I think that number has to be in the mid-30s.
Yep.
I think, you know, 35 to me is a solid number. And if you take 9 more, you're probably going to make 3 more at least, maybe 4 more. Difference. And, yeah, you win the game if you do that. So I think they do. You're right. They've got to find ways to take more threes. Obi Toppin, Ben Shepherd did a really good job off the bench. Toppin was 2 for 3. Shepherd was 2 for 4. I mean, the most threes that were taken was Miles took 6. That number is really pretty low when you look at the Pacers during the season. Normally in a game, whoever is leading them in three-point attempts is probably anywhere between 7 and 10. So you've got to take more threes and put more pressure on New York's defense. And I think counter that, I said you've got to also attack. So it's got to be attack the rim, you know, make them work defensively, but get good ball movement to get good threes.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing. I think the Pacers found something in game one that was working well for them. I mean, for majority of the game, they had the lead, and they were playing their style of basketball. It's just New York was able to outlast them for the full 48 minutes. And one of the reasons why they were so good was because Josh Hart was everywhere on both sides of the court. And so when you look at a guy like Josh Hart, this is a guy that, you know, you probably didn't think too much about a couple of years ago. But by the time he comes to New York and becomes this, you know, big focal point of their team, he looked awesome. Like, he was probably the best player on the court last night on both ends in the entirety of the game. I understand Brunson had 43, but like the fact that he nearly had a triple double in this game, he was just everywhere. What can Indiana do to kind of slow him down, take him out of the game a little bit, and not let him be as impactful?
Yeah, I think the one thing he, you know, I mentioned that the Knicks had 20 fast break points. He had a bunch of those, right? He got out in transition, got out and ran. I heard Rick Carlisle said today on one of his interviews, and I was thinking about this during the game. I thought the Pacers took too many chances defensively and got into 5-on-4, 4-on-3 situations. I remember one time Aaron Nesmith went for a steal against Hartenstein, and that created an opportunity for the Knicks. And that's what Hart is looking for. He's looking for opportunities in a 4-on-3, a 3-on-2 situation. So I think you've got to be very careful in not taking chances, especially in a full court game. And the Pacers want a pressure. I mean, and I like it. I like the fact that they're picking up full court. But just keep your man in front of you. There's no reason that you've got to go for a steal, you know, once or twice during the game, because every time they did that in game one, they paid for it. And the other thing, guys, when we go back to the three-point shooting, I mean, the Knicks made 11 of 23. They were highly efficient. And every time they needed a shot to get back in the game, when the Pacers got a 9-point lead, they had a 7-point lead, they had a 5-point lead, every time New York hit a three, Brunson hit one at the top of the key, Hart hit one, DiVincenzo, Ananobi. So the three-point shot was very effective for New York, and I'd like to see Indiana win that game. I think they need to win the three-point numbers.
I completely agree. The 26 threes that I mentioned before, it's just too low for Indiana Pacer basketball. But when you're talking about being effective, I thought the Pacers bench was extremely effective in this game. They outscored the Knicks bench 46-3. We saw TJ McConnell look like regular season TJ McConnell, if not better. Do you expect this to perhaps continue, maybe not 18 points per game, or do you think that that's going to be some of the biggest adjustments that New York makes in game two to try and slow down TJ McConnell?
No, I think if you look at the trends at the end of the year, TJ had he had like 16 of 18, 17 of 20. I mean, he was scoring in double figures on a regular basis, and so too was Obi Toppin off the bench. So I don't think it's any surprise that those are the two guys that are leading you in scoring off the bench. I thought Isaiah Jackson, after a little bit of a shaky start, really did a nice job. 8 points, 5 rebounds, 3 blocks in 13 minutes. And Ben Shepherd, who would have thought at the beginning of the year that Ben Shepherd would be giving you the quality minutes that he's given you at the end of the regular season and into the postseason? So, no, I don't really think anything changes there. And it probably is not going to change because Tom Thibodeau is not going to use his bench very much. And so the Pacers bench is going to have a huge numbers advantage. The key will be the starters have to do a better job. Quinn and I talk about this all the time. We're not big plus minus guys as far as individual games are concerned. I'm more of a plus minus guy when you look at, you know, 5 games, 10 games, 15 games. But if you look at the plus minus from game one, all 5 Pacers starters were in the minuses. Nesmith was minus 16, Nembhard minus 13, Tyrese minus 12. All of the bench guys were plus, and then all of the Knicks starters were plus, and all of their bench guys were minus. So it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. But I think TJ continues to play the way he's playing. I think Obi is as well. I think it's up to the starters to elevate themselves, especially in the fourth quarter. The other stat that I was going to give you is in the regular season, when the Pacers led after 3 quarters, they were 42-5. One of those 5 losses was at Madison Square Garden. If you remember, you were there. Bocce was there, of course. But that was the game that Tyrese was limited due to minutes restrictions. So he could not close the game. So normally when the Pacers have a lead going into the fourth quarter, they maintain that lead. But that's now twice against New York that they've given up the lead in the fourth.
Yeah, that's not great to hear, obviously, since New York is their opponent. And New York is a very good team and very similar to Indiana. They are relentless. They don't let anything get in their way. And they're one of those teams that they've been in a lot of these big moments. Where Indiana, they didn't play a lot of games down the stretch. And I think that's a great point to bring up because New York's had a lot of close games. They're very comfortable in those tight moments where Indiana – I think they had one overtime game all season besides the one that went to overtime against Milwaukee. They had the one against Chicago that kind of went kind of crazy. So Do you think that maybe just some like late game like experience like that by you know, New York having all those moments of close games and having that go-to score, where Indiana, you would like it to be Haliburton, but they just don't really have that go-to score. It's been kind of a, you know, by committee type thing, or, you know, maybe a different person every different night. Do you think that has been maybe a reason why New York might have an edge here in a close game?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit, guys, from the standpoint that if you look back at their Philadelphia series, it seemed like every game went down to the final seconds. So that's a six-game series. Now they play game one of this series. So they look at seven games that they've played that have come down to final possession, you know, that type of thing. For Indiana, it was one game in the Milwaukee series. That was game three. And then last night, I think the Pacers learned a lot in game one of this series, just like they learned a lot in game one of the Milwaukee series. And I think you make those appropriate adjustments and you look at some of the things that you need to do better, need to rebound better. You don't, I've said this, guys, you don't have to win the glass, but you don't want to get beat by eight. I mean, if it's 37-35 or 38-36, I'm totally fine with that, because if you look at all the other numbers, I mean, they forced 15 turnovers, scored 22 points off those. They did enough things to win the game. And that's the difference between game one of the Milwaukee series and game one of the New York series. In game one of the Milwaukee series, they really had no chance to win that game. In game one of this series, they had plenty of opportunities to win.
And when you talk about the rebounding battle, I mean, sometimes it just comes down to, can you get timely rebounds? And I think that earlier in the year, when the Knicks had that comeback against the Pacers, they had over 20 offensive rebounds in that game. That was a big reason why they won that. In this game, in the fourth quarter, the Knicks had six offensive rebounds. They had just two offensive rebounds from quarters one through three. So that's a big part of it. But I think if you're the Pacers and you're saying, hey, in game one, we had the Knicks play up to our speed, does that really make you think that, hey, this is how the series could go? Or do you think this is maybe a little bit of an outlier to say, hey, you know what, moving forward, some of these games could be slower? Or is this, hey, you know, Indiana at home, they get out and they run and they're a totally different team, that maybe this pace could continue?
Well, you know, I guess part of it, guys, we have to say, are we convinced that the Knicks can shoot 54% again?
I'm not.
I don't know if I am either. They were 11 of 23 from three. That's nearly 50%. So I'm not convinced that the season has shown that that's the way that New York can play on a consistent basis. Now, some would say they're doing it against a team that's not one of the top defenses in the NBA. But if you look at the other games during the course of the regular season, I thought the Pacers defense was sufficient enough to win two of the three against New York. So I guess I would question whether New York can shoot the ball again in game two the way they did in game one.
It's going to be interesting for sure. I'm not exactly sure what to expect for game two, but I expect Indiana to come out and play much harder. And it's going to be cool because Reggie Miller will be in the building. And from someone that's broadcasted for so long, what do you think about Reggie Miller being brought into this this play-by-play here to be on the call with Stan Van Gundy and Brian Anderson, and like what that means for this, the rivalry of New York versus Indiana?
I think it's great. I had a great conversation yesterday with Brian Anderson the morning of game one. And he told me that Reggie was going to be on the call for game two. He needed to be back for game two of the Denver Minnesota series because TNT has the Western Conference Finals exclusively. So he and Kevin Harlan needed to do that. But I think it's going to be fantastic. I'm sure you'll have a lot of former Knicks in the building. Spike Lee's going to be there. You know, Reggie's got to be neutral because he works for TNT, but you know his heart's going to be pounding. And in the back of his mind, he is hoping that the blue and gold can knock off the New York Knicks.
It's going to be exciting. And I think that when you're not having success in the regular season, you don't make the playoffs, some of these rivalries, and of course the player movement, they kind of disappear a little bit. How awesome is it that in this year, it feels like the Pacers kind of created a real rivalry with the Bucks, but may have renewed a rivalry that is very dear to a lot of us in this Pacers-Knicks rivalry of the past?
Well, I think to that point, guys, they've revived things in Indianapolis and throughout the country for Pacers fans like you, Fauci, you know, who doesn't live here in the Indianapolis area. I mean, I'm out and about, and in the last week or so, I've seen more people wearing Pacers T-shirts, socks, hats, sweatshirts than I've seen in a long, long time. And I think that says a lot about what this team has done. It's not done yet. I mean, they still have the opportunity to win this series and get to the Eastern Conference Finals. But let's be honest. They are ahead of schedule. 2 years ago, they won 25 games. Last year, they won 35. This year, they win 47 and get to the second round. I think when we were all listening to Kevin Pritchard in the fall of 2022, I don't think any of us thought that was possible. And yet, here we are. So I do think having that rivalry that was created during the in-season tournament and during the regular season with the Bucks, getting this opportunity to play a team that you played six times in the 90s in the playoffs and then had a great series in 2013 with a game six win where Roy Hibbert blocked Carmelo Anthony at the rim. So I think all those things go into, you know, bringing Pacers basketball back. And really so excited about that and, you know, can't wait for game two.
It's going to be a lot of fun, Chris, and I appreciate you taking the time to come on this podcast and kind of preview game two and talk a little bit about game one with us. And we'd love to have you come on maybe for one of our recap shows. Maybe we can do game five. If it gets to game five, that'd be a lot of fun to have you back on, since I know you won't be able to be in the arena for that, since you'll probably be at home watching on the couch like we will be. So that would be a lot of fun. But go ahead and let everybody know where they can find you at, and will you be a little bit more active on X now that you're not broadcasting?
Yeah, I mean, last night I tried to I tried to tweet or X a couple of times a quarter, just because I have the opportunity. I'm sitting there on the couch not calling the game. It's a little hard to do that when you're doing play-by-play on a regular basis. So yeah, at Chris Denari on X. I am on Instagram, but I very rarely go there. I am on Facebook. But most of the activity when I communicate with people, it's usually through X.
Hey, Chris, we always love having you on. We look forward to the next time. And, hey, let's even this series back up. I think the glass half full approach is the approach to take.
That sounds great. Thanks, guys.
All right, Chris. Thank you.